Mr. Hayes, Real 3. We were talking about your time with the 70th Holding Battalion of the Rifle Brigade at Ranby Camp near Retford. And,
what about tactical exercises? Because I believe you went all over Yorkshire with...
it was more or less, as far as we were concerned, driver training. Because we did a lot of them out. But, you know, couldn't drive a real van, never mind it. But we went to Matlock and a few more places, you know. And what we used to do...
And you were driving what?
Brendan Cabot. But also, while we were there, we were sent up to... It was called Bigmore. I'm sure it was called Bigmore. It was quite a wild area, and they used to do field firing out there. But we used to go out as a... fire watching people in case the gorse got flared, and we get dumped there, and you know, for 3 or 4 days, and come back and see where they drop us and pick us up again. But you just got used to living, you know.
What sort of things were you doing out there on exercises?
Not a lot of exercises really, as such.
So it's mainly driving, as you said. And this would be Bren carriers.
Yeah. And there were some funny things there, actually. We were going through a village early one morning, and a fellow that wasn't particularly good at driving, and this fellow pushed a handcart out like that, out on a side road. And this Harris fellow hit the handcart, and the fellow ended up with just the two shafts in his hand. He didn't realise he did, never mind. But all right. But then when they started to peel off the flens,
any other stories before we leave Ranby Camp? You're going to tell us about the one where you'd have been in trouble if you were caught.
Oh, yes. We decided that the corporal that was with us, who would also put in for a transfer to some of the more active units, we got the keys to the indoor rifle range. Well, I don't know what got into us. And we just decimated the whole thing, the lights. And fortunately, we were all getting posted that weekend. I said, if anybody gets in there and finds out what a mess it's in. But yeah, and it was terrible, really. It was just, you know, they had lights shining on the targets, so we blasted them as well. And, you know, absolute devilment. But we would have been in, got it in the neck if they'd have found out who had done it.
Now, why had you applied? You'd actually applied to leave, or were you just given a post in the normal way of events?
What, from there to the tanks.
How did that come about?
Well,
what was the whole background of you going to the tanks?
Well, the fact was that by this time, you know, you get talking to people. And what had actually happened was I got the brother. I mean, I got a different story from the family, completely different, really different story. I wrote to Stan and said, claim me into the unit, because I was then, as far as they were concerned, A1.
Now, tell me about that. You haven't told me on tape about that. Tell me the whole story about B1 and A1.
Yeah. Well, that was a complete and utter mystery to me. When I was at Liverpool, Renshaw Hall, and I was signing my attestation papers, he looked at them and he said, what did you want to go in, son? I said, oh, I'm going to tanks. I never connected the two. And he said, you can't win the tanks. I said, why not? He said, because you're graded. I said, what for? He said, well, the only thing I can see is you're a bit underweight. He said, the only thing I can advise you to go in is the Rifle Brigade, because they've got small tanks, they call them Brindle carriers. So, like a through, I said, oh, so anyway, then when it got to the time that we decided I should make a move, I put in for, I didn't know I had to go to a training camp, but put in for transfer to Farnborough. So the next thing is I get a posting down to Farnborough, and it's 55th Training Regiment, RAC.
Now your brother then was serving with the 5th and 12th Army.
Yeah.
And he claimed you?
He claimed me, because he could do as a younger brother. As an older brother, I should say. So anyway, then I reported down to Farnborough, and it was an estate tagged on to the main camp. You did requisition the civilian small estate. And when we got there, the strangest thing happened. And you know, it's the thing that sticks in your mind. We got down there, we were outside the house that was the headquarters for that squadron. And we were standing there, and all of a sudden, we all looked up. Oh, an aeroplane with no propeller on. And it was one of the experimental little jets flying out of Farnborough. So the sergeant major said, before we go any further, I'm going to warn you, you haven't seen that, and you will keep your mouth shut for the rest of the war. Otherwise, you'll be in trouble. Wouldn't give any explanation. He said, there's already been a Canadian, because there was a Canadian station down there, who was caught writing home about that, saying what they'd seen. And he got court-martialed. And he really got a heavy, you know, sort of sentence for it. So it wasn't until, I never mentioned it at all. To me, it was an interesting sort of thing to see. Because we were on the, our training camp was on the unit, it was only a wire fence between us and the airfield. And so anyway, I never did say anything. And I'm in the Rafa thing, you know. And I was talking about one. So I said, I saw one of the first little jets flying above the army. I said, I'm telling you, I did. It never went operational, that one, because it was just a single engine, what's that, you know. But it would not move. And what they used to do, they used to put German aircraft up for it to mock flight with. But as I say, I never mentioned it at all. It's always a thing that, you know, I thought that's an interesting little thing that happened.
Now, you were joining the 55th Training Regiment, yeah. Royal Armour Corps, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, for a conversion course.
Now, what was the conversion course? Could you describe exactly what you were doing?
Well, you've got no infantry training at all. You've got trained on tanks. And I was
so that you were being converted from infantry to tankman. And what was the elements of the course then?
Well, you learned a bit of the mechanism of a tank, and also you were taught how to drive. And then we used to do our training along Mon Valley.
Now tell me about learning to drive the tank. What tank were you learning to drive?
Well, the pre one before the Cromwell, and it was called the Covenanter. Almost shortly. They never went in action as a tank. The Cromwell were superseded them. They were very like the Cromwell, you know, the same type of layout and the gearbox and everything. And I pretty well, you know, put the mechanical side up pretty well. And I did, of course.
Now, how did you drive a Covenanter camp? Could you describe?
Well, the Covenanter was, as I say, was the pre, what's the name, to the Cromwell. And they worked in an entirely different way, where they had, instead of having a normal thing with just slowing one down with levers.
One track down rather than the other.
Yeah, well, this was all these tanks after that was based on the Merritt Brown gearbox, and it was a fantastic gearbox. It was they were what they call epicyclic gears, and it was a fantastic thing. If you wanted to turn right, you would pull the one stick, and one would slow down, and the other in the gearbox would, you know, to give you your turn, would spin up. But there was one thing in it that they couldn't understand. If you were on the tank park and you started your engine and you pulled a lever, it didn't go forward. It would just rip the tummy out on its axis, and it was a hell of a lot of big lads killed with that. Again, in a tank park, you know, your tanks are that far apart, and you know, you'd pull the lever by mistake, somebody would be, you know, sardine. But they never understood why it didn't blow the gearbox up. Because in actual fact, what happened when that, one track would go one way and one would go completely the other way, in the gearbox. And I got quite used to it. What they used to do is, you weren't very careful, they'd back you into a tank part, and you go your backside into a tank facing forward. And if you weren't very careful, the fellow that was guiding you, you always to do it by hand signals like that. And if you wasn't very careful, you'd back up the tank behind you, up the front of it, and you'd end up with a gun like a banana. You found them on two or three occasions, actually. But they were much different. The Sherman was a much heavier tank to drive because it worked on the old basis of a differential.
I'll come on to Sherman's, because yeah. Sticking to the Covenant, what did you think of the Covenanter then?
They were a good tank to drive, a very good tank to drive. And when you were learning to drive, the instructor would sit on the, you know, alongside you, just above the tracks. And occasionally, it happened with me, and I was changed the gear like that. And what they had, I didn't realise, had a fail safe thing so it wouldn't mend the gear. If you misjudged the gear, the gear lever would snap off. And I was going along one day, and changed gear, and I pushed it forward, and it just broke at the bottom. I didn't realise, and I just got on with this, and stuck it up to the instructor, and said, what do we do with this? So I stopped. And apparently it was a fail safe thing, and, you know. The what's in it was brass, I think, the lever itself, but there was a softer metal thing right at the base of it. And if you did something stupid, which I have recently done, it just snapped off. But we should go round and round.
Now, what were you doing on this long
valley?
What were you doing? What was the type of ground in Long Valley?
Undulating, to say the least, mud and all sorts. But you have to learn the skills of starting at the bottom and go up to the top and rolling it over the top and then change it in gear when you're on the top of the apex of it and, you know, to come down again the other side. And
you were learning to go up steep hills.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
What about across things like trenches or...
Well, but it was a bit of all of that on one day. It was the main... What they used to do, actually, they had people on there, which were tank, and they used to knock out of the tanks. They were the track vehicle experimental establishment, and they used to try and drive them to destruction. But as we said, and we all agree that, they were so good at drivers that they wouldn't drive them to, you know, destruction. They'd drive them like hell, but they wouldn't, very seldom they would, you know, break anything down. Yeah, that was the idea, because when we got tanks, when we got a replacement, we went on to Sherman's when we went across to Normandy.
I'll come on to Sherman's. Sticking to this tank, you know, when you were learning,
yeah.
I mean, were you learning what you couldn't do in a tank? Because the tanks will do a lot, they'll
yeah.
go through walls
yeah,
and
yeah.
things, but there's some things they won't do.
Yeah.
Hills they won't take,
yeah.
ditches they won't cross, walls they won't go through.
Yeah.
Did you learn what a tank couldn't do as well as what it could do?
Yeah, I suppose you did. But it was done, you know, sort of it was experience more than anything. You know, we'd say, oh, don't do that, and you can't do that. And, but there was nothing laid down particularly. But,
now, that was one part, of course, was learning to drive.
Yeah.
What about the other parts? I mean, were you taught gunnery at all while you were there?
Yes, yeah, of course.
Which gun?
I think it was the 6-pounder, actually. And we weren't trained in the tanks for that. We were trained in what they call wipers, which were a mock-up of a turret. And, you know, you know they give you...
How did they work? Because I've heard of them before, but they're quite difficult to describe, aren't they? So if you
well,
could have...
They're just like a cage, about the same, you know, the same as a turret. But it got a gun of sorts on, which didn't fire, obviously. And they would give you a target, you know, they would have to follow the target around with this, you know, your controls and that sort of thing. Because the tanks themselves, when I first went there, they were traversing by hand. But then, you know, as time went on, they were power driven, you know, they were hydraulically driven. The turrets. And
So this riper you could track round.
Yeah, you have a target from them, and you'd be looking through the, you know, what's name, and you know, they'd say you want, you know, pull the trigger as if you were aware firing, you know. And
what about loaded gun drill, loading the gun? I mean, I know the wireless operators usually did but did you learn that?
I can't remember doing very much of that actually. But
so you more learned to do the turret than to actually load the gun.
Yeah. And but there was a strange thing that happened while I was down there. We went on to wagon driving, which were
lorries.
Lorries, yeah. Well, they were mostly trained on 1500 weights. So we lined up, and the corporal that was taking us was sorting them out, you know. And somebody said in the background to me, "Don't, this isn't working, son, this corporal. Don't crack on, you can drive." He said, because he doesn't like smart people that can drive already. He wants to teach you. So there were four of us went on this to start with. Well, he got rid of three of them the first day, I think. He couldn't even find the gear. So I went on and was pussyfooting around it. And gradually, you know, sort of playing along with him. And I was coming up through Aldershot one day, because Aldershot and Farnborough come together. And I 1500 weight shot out onto the main road right in front of me. Well, you know, so I'd been used to foot brakes that weren't particularly reliable, so you relied on the handbrake as well. So as I, you know, put my foot on and I grabbed the handbrake, and his hand came down over mine, and he said, "Yeah, Bobby, you can drive, can you? I said, "Well, no." He said, "Well, follow that car, follow that wagon." And he said, "Pull in front of it." And there was an officer in it, and an ATS girl driving it. So he got out, and I thought, "Oh my God." You know, he was a corporal, but he wasn't referring to this officer. He said, "If my trainee driver hadn't driven before, which I didn't realise, you'd have been mangled the way your driver, you know, shot him up and down." I thought, "Oh my God, he's going to end up on a charge of ways." What he's saying to this officer. Anyway, the next day, it paid dividends for me, because the next day he said, when we move off, just hang back a bit. So I hang back a bit, said, "Right, okay, go on." Now, they all turned right when we got out. He said, "You turn left." And we went out. There's some beautiful houses down there, you know, like bags shot and all the way in there, you know. And the hog's back. Gorgeous. And he said, "You're going along." And he looked at what happened to the left of him. He said, "Slow down, these big gates, pull in here." So I said, "Okay." So we pulled in, and he said, we went up this big drive, and up to the back of the house. Now he said, "I'm going in, and I'll bring a cup of tea and some biscuits in," which he did. So anyway, I was intrigued, and we stayed there for about an hour. And he said, "Right, you'd better go back now." So I said, "What's going on?" He said, "My wife there is the cook. And I, in civilian life, was the chauffeur here." And he said, "Being as I don't need to teach you how to drive, this is what we'll do for the rest of the week." And we did. But it was the most awkward shot, you know, back in the barracks. And we got on fine with him. And, you know, so he said, "I'll give you a good report." But it was just one of those things that sticks in your mind.
So they taught you how to drive 15, well, you knew, but 15 underweight lorries. They gave you a riper 6-pounder gun, and they taught you how to drive the Covenanter.
Yeah.
Now, did they teach you any elements of fitting or mechanics while you were there?
Yeah.
Because that's what you ended up at. Yeah. How did they do that?
Well, they had what's in it. They had a stripped down one, and I was, you know, I could probably not take it in.
Had you had much experience before of fitting, you know, or mechanics?
I think because if you got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, your van wouldn't start, you fixed it. You know, you didn't look for somebody else to fix, even if it was only, you know, strip a car with ethanol or a petrol pump or something. You got the basics of it. But anyway, then at the end of the time, I went up to Farnborough, and I got not to Farnborough too.
So this was just a basic course as a fitter?
Yeah, basic course.
So how far would that go? I mean, what were you doing?
I was trained as a driver mech AFV, armoured fighting vehicle.
So how far would the fitting part, you know, the mechanic part go?
It wouldn't get a lot, but I had a good psyche of what was going on. So when we got to, when I got to Bridlington, which was the next post.
So all you did at I'll let you bring you back, but all you did at Farnborough was a basic mechanics course, which was just the normal how an engine worked.
Yeah.
So would that go much beyond oiling and the rest of it?
Look about on the, particularly on the B vehicles, and take the rotor around and say, get that going, and they'd see you sweating, in the end, if you went through the sequence, you'd say, we've got the rotor arm to this. You say, oh, you found it, and it's fault finding the killer.
So that was all it was. And now, anything else while you were at Farnborough? Was the discipline any different in the Royal Armoured Corps from what it had been in the Rifle Brigade? You said it was very strict in the Rifle Brigade.
It was nothing at all like it in the Armoured Corps. Because it was basic training, so most of the lads that I was down there with, it was basic tank training. And, there wasn't much marching and clapping about. But, I enjoyed it down there. And there was a strange thing happening down there. We said, right, you finish the training, you can go on leave. So we went on leave, the whole lot of us. And when we got back, we were all lined up outside the house that was the squadron headquarters. And the sergeant major came out and said, right, all going to go, don't get your extra kit out of the stores. So we said, well, because he said, you're going on leave. So we're going on leave. Yes, you're going on embarkation leave. What's going on here? So he said, right, we're marching out to the main camp. And they measured us up for KDs. And I thought, they don't need KDs in Bridlington, I don't think. What's going on?
You already knew you were going to Bridlington.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, we marched back and lined up again in the office. And he said, not expecting anybody to, sort of object. Anybody who doesn't want to go on this draft, stand first, the rest dismiss. And me and another fella stood fast. Well, the excuse he used, the fella named Poole, was the army blankets didn't upset his skin or something. I thought, well, you're not going to get very far, and that's the story. So he went in, and the fella's name, the manager, was an ex World War One. Officer. And he also had bitches. His name was Major Costa Bailey. So we got marched up there and I said, and he was a real, jolly old thing. And he said, tell me, trooper, why can't we send you on this draft? And I said, you're not allowed to send me on this draft, sir. He said, why? This is 70. So well, there was a man talking about. He said, why? I said, because I'm only attached here for conversion course. I'm not part of the unit. And he turned on and the sergeant major said, it's a war office posting, sir, which it was. So he said, oh, well, they'll go back to you, Watson. Anyway, by midday, they came round and the sergeant major said, right, get your kit ready to go to the fighting force up in Bridlington. The rest had gone on, leave by then, embarkation leave. So, anyway, I said, okay, so it went, and I had that much kit with me. I went into London, I had to change trains, and I honestly couldn't lift my kit bag on top of my big pack, you're in what they call FMO, full march in order. And I couldn't get my kit bag on top, and this sailor came along, he just got it, and slammed it on the, top of my big pack. anyway, that was my journey up to Bridlington then.
Now, you were going to join your brother's unit. He'd asked for you.
Yeah.
Now, you got there on the 30th of November 1943.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how were you received into the unit? Because this is, that you were you were coming in. You were a driver mechanic, with the emphasis on the driver from the sound of it. And
what had happened was, I didn't. But anyway, when we got there, I was put in with the drivers in the echelon for a couple of weeks.
Which echelon's that?
it was probably BS1. And the next thing was...
And how did they make you welcome?
Because I couldn't understand what they were talking about.
Now, that's what I wanted to talk to you. I mean, they were originally a Scottish territory unit.
And mostly, the wagon drivers were, you know, broad Scots. And Major Felix as well. And I looked along all that with them. And the next thing is, Stan said to me, I've had a word with Nobby Clark. Now, Nobby Clark was the next sergeant. And he was one of the best mech sergeants that any unit could have. As a matter of fact, he'd got to be thrown down on it. His arm was like that, he couldn't straighten it. He marched and so on. And he wore a medal ring. He got the MBE, military medal. You know, it is a military decoration if it's used in the right context. And I went in there, and after a while he said, I'm going to send you to 29th Brigade Workshops, which was in the town. It's a different unit altogether. So I went there, and he didn't say what I was doing, but obviously what he was trying to do was get me in as a fully fledged fitter. And I coped with all the mechanical side, but when it came to the trade test at the end of it, I know very well I failed it miserably. And I was trying to flammable, and it wouldn't be flammable. They'd show you a bearing and they'd say, what's the matter with that, you know? It just looked like a bearing to me. And if I'd, you know, used my look and said, well, you know, it's worn or this, that, the other, but I didn't. Anyway, I had problems there because I didn't get any pay for the first couple of weeks because 29th Armoured Brigade was also workshops, was also the workshops for the Rifle Brigade, the HLF Brigade in our unit, in the division. And they said, after a couple of no, I'm not getting no pay. So I said, oh, what do you mean? Well, what are you? I said, I'm a trooper. Oh, bloody hell, he said, I wonder you ain't getting paid. We got you down there as a rifleman. You know, an overhang from my Rifle Brigade days. So anyway, that was straight enough. I did about a month in there. Anyway.
And what sort of work were you doing there?
I was doing mainly as work. The rest of them were doing, taking tank engines out and putting them in. And I was looking in as good as the rest of them, and I quite enjoyed it. And the one thing that I did do when I was down there were Sherman fires, and on the end of the trenches there were five engines down one central trenches. And on the end of the trenches there was either a water pump or something, and it had a plate like that to get in. But once you undid the nuts and you drew it out, there was the shaft that came off the end of the crankshaft was an externally splined shaft, and the pump that was had that it had a collar on, and the collar went over the spline of the end of the crankshaft and joined up with the crankshaft, the other spline shaft, and I was the only one there that could get their hand in it when it went up, because I got a hand, like a woman's hand, and they used to come looking at, will you come and put your hand in here so you can get this spine thing out? That didn't do me any good in the end. So eventually, I went back to, and I stayed with the fitters then. So
the fitters where?
In Bridlington, the A Squadron Fitters.
That's where you went to A Squadron Fitters?
Yeah.